Thank you, and good evening, one and all. Now, look, if you're listening out at home, I want you to get a pad of paper and a pen, because you're going to have to take notes tonight. There will be a test at the end of the show. So make sure you take notes. I've got a lot of stuff. I've got a big stash of information here tonight. If you're a sportsman, you're going to be fascinated with all the great stuff we have tonight. We also have a great guest. I'll introduce him in just a minute. First, the crew who make the show possible this Labor Day weekend, the man behind the toggle switches there in the operations center, the sweetheart of Grand Lake Stream, my friend, the tomato man, Norm Plord.
Good evening. And I do have plenty of tomatoes.
Do you really? So one might come my way, maybe?
I'm trying to wind it down. I mean, it's like I've already canned over almost 90 pints of
90
salsa.
90 pints, have you?
Of salsa.
Yeah?
And last year I did over 130 quarts of tomatoes.
So wow.
It's getting old.
Well, if you get any left over, Diane would love to have them.
I'll keep you in mind.
All right, thank you. And the lady who is our new co-host on Maine Outdoors, she follows the footsteps of Wiggy Robinson and Bob Lehman, and she is a great lady. She's a registered Maine guide. And she hails from Aroostook County. She's an ardent sportswoman, and her name is Catherine Gordon.
Hi, how are you this evening?
We're doing well.
Good.
Nice to have you here again.
It's great to be here. I love it here.
Nice to have you here. And our guest tonight, he is a lieutenant, warden lieutenant, and he heads up the Bangor area office. Warden Lieutenant Josh, get your name right. Boubier.
You nailed it.
Did I say it right?
You got it.
Josh Boubier. Nice to have you here, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
You bet.
It.
Our pleasure. And we're going to talk about a lot of interesting things. Josh heads up the search and rescue team for the state of Maine. I've always found it's a fascinating work they do. They do some great work. They find a lot of lost persons, and we're going to get down in depth tonight and find out just how they do it. And if you have any questions for Josh, we welcome your calls and your participation. And we have a statewide toll-free number, which is
1-800-966-1039.
And you are listening to us tonight, if you didn't know that, on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3 and 103.9 in Bangor. And we're also streaming worldwide. That means if you have a friend or relative faraway places, they can hear us live in real time by going online at WVOM-FM, right? Yeah. So spread the word. Tell your friends. We have a lot of loyal listeners already down in Massachusetts, out in Ohio, Tennessee. We know about those folks because they always let us know how much they enjoy the show. So anyway, it's nice again to be with you tonight on Labor Day weekend. Want to remind you again, the show is sponsored every week in part by my favorite publication, the Northwood Sporting Journal. And if you'd like to buy a subscription, Norm would like you to do that.
It's a great read.
And the number is what, Norm?
I don't remember that number.
You think after 20 years you'd have that.
It's not an important number.
I know it's not for you, but it is for me.
I totally agree.
All right. 732-4880 is the magic number. Give Alicia a call during the week if you'd like to sign up for a subscription, or you can pick it up at a newsstand near you. Now, I've got a bunch of little housekeeping items, and I've got to try to get these done quick so we can get into the interview. Let's see. September 7th, that's this coming Saturday, right?
I believe it is, yes. The 8th is Sunday.
Yours truly will be up at Whitney Outfitters up in Lincoln. That's a special open house up there, and I'll be there with some books to sign and sell to you if you're interested. We hope you'll stop by and say hello. I'm not sure. Diane, are you going to join us for that? You haven't decided yet, right? You think so? Yeah. Anyway, I'll be there with my bride, and stop by and say hello. We'd love to see you and love to meet you. And that's at Whitney Outfitters on September 7th. I'll be there until noon. I think they open in the morning at 8. Then the following Saturday, I'll be at Old Town Trading Post for another open house on September 14th. Same deal. We'll have some books, and we'll be there to meet and greet you if you'd like to stop by. So September 7th, Lincoln, and September 14th, Old Town Trading Post. Want to also remind you, the Sportsman's Alliance of Maine is having their big banquet, their heritage banquet, which is taking place also on the 7th. Starts at 4 o'clock. And let's see, there's a website you can check it out, members@samofmaine.org, if you want to get a ticket in advance. And they're at the Waterville Elks Club on September 7th, beginning at 4 p.m. And let's see, I think that covers all the housekeeping items. Okay, before we get to our guests, we have an Outdoor Digest time to bring to you. Doe permits were issued. We remind you for the final and last time, you can't just sit around and expect to get the doe permit. You got to purchase that thing. And so you have until the 12th of September to do so. If you are looking for that doe permit and your name was called in the lottery, make sure you get online and purchase it for $12. Let's see what else. Oh, this is kind of an interesting thing. One of my writers, whose name will not be mentioned, wrote a column about the crossbow laws. And I'll ask you this, Josh. There's some apparent confusion about whether a crossbow hunter has to wear blaze orange during the archery seasons in September and October. Do you know the answer to that?
I would have to, not off the top of my head. Yeah.
Well, this is interesting, all right? He tried to write in the column that I'm an archery hunter,
yep.
And I have a new crossbow this year for the first time, and he said that if you are a crossbow hunter, you have to wear hunter orange even during the archery season. So I looked it up, and there's a website called Crossbow Country, and they said that anytime you're in the woods with a crossbow, you have to have hunter orange. So then I went and I looked to the IFNW website, and you do not have to wear hunter orange if you're a crossbow hunter in September or October.
Begs the question, are you an archer or are you a firearms?
Well, this is the interesting thing. The department is saying that if you're a crossbow hunter, you're an archer, right?
Correct.
That's what I would think.
But if you are a crossbow hunter during November, they categorize you as a firearms person because you have to wear hunter orange.
Right.
So that's an interesting situation. I'm not sure whether I like it or not.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I think crossbows have become so very popular now,
yeah,
that people are choosing to utilize crossbows, you know, during that firearms
portion of the year, for the whole fall.
Instead of even going to their rifle or whatever their firearm of choice is. So I think it makes sense, you know, to have the orange on when you're out there during rifle season.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly the safest thing to do.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, anyway, we'll see. There'll be some people who don't like it, I can tell you that, because they'll say, well, we're archers. And now, do I have this right, though? If I hunt with my compound bow in November, I don't have to wear blaze orange. It used to be that way. It's just still that way, right?
Yeah, I'd have to actually look it up, because we have a pictograph. Like, if you're doing this, then this, and the different times of the year and everything like that. Definitely, it's something you definitely have to look up before you go do to make sure
you want to check it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, don't hold me accountable to this. But the best that I've been able to determine in my little Google search is that if you are a crossbow hunter, you don't have to wear blaze orange during the archery seasons. But once the firearm season starts, you got to put some blaze orange on. That's what I think is the case.
Yeah. If it was me, I would put it on even if it wasn't the law in November, just because there's so many more hunters in the woods.
Yeah. I think it's a safe thing to do. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. One other thing here. McGalloway River. This is an interesting story. Wardens found a gillnet. On this fabled McGalloway River, which is a fabled trout fishery. And I guess there were some trout caught in that gillnet, right, Josh?
Yeah, from what I had heard and saw some pictures of, there was already some fish that had been caught. It's a little unclear how long the net had been in the water, how long it had been pulled. But yeah, if anyone listening out there has any insider information into that, you can certainly put your tip in through Maine Operation Game Thief.
And there is a reward. How much is the reward?
The reward's up to $2,000 now. It was started as $1,000, and there was another $1,000 match for it. Yeah.
Oh, that's great. $2,000 reward for anybody with information leading to the arrest of bozos that put the gillnet in the McGalloway River. I can't believe anybody would do that, but they certainly have done it. Anyway, remember that. If you know anybody up in that area that might lead to the arrest of those who did that, there's a $2,000 reward, and you can call Operation Game Thief Do they have a, I don't know if they, you don't know what the number is. It's like,
off the top, you can go on the website. If you type in Maine Operation Game Thief,
you can find it there.
You can find it there. There's an option to anonymous. Yep. You can do an online tip or call in.
Okay. One other thing here. We're going to dispense with a fishing report right now because we got so much other stuff. I just want to give you a quick, actually, I think Catherine's going to give you a rundown of the season dates.
All right.
Because everybody gets confused. They get busy for Labor Day weekend, and they're wondering, now, let's see. Now, when's the expanded archery season start? When's the regular archery season start? When's the firearm season start? When's the youth day? And what are they?
Here we go. For deer season, expanded September 7th through December 14th. Regular archery season, October 5th through November 1st. Youth day, 2 days, October 25th and 26th. Maine resident only day, November 2nd. Firearm season, November 4th through November 30th. Muzzleloader season, December 2nd to December 7th. Of course, we're now currently in bear season, and we have bear baiting up until September 21st. Grouse, we're all waiting for grouse season. That starts September 28th. And turkey, do you do any turkey hunting?
Not in the fall.
Oh, not in the fall,
in
but
the
September
spring,
16th.
Yeah.
That's coming up in September 16th.
All right. Thank you, Catherine. Good rundown. What a busy fall we're going to have, huh, Norm?
It is. I just checked on Maine.gov, and it says, hunter orange requirement. A person may not hunt with firearms or crossbows during the open firearm season on deer unless that person is wearing two articles of hunter orange clothing that are in good, serviceable condition.
Yeah, that's not contrary to what we just said, is it?
No, I'm just saying
what you're confirming it, yeah.
But that's what the law says.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, good read. All right, Josh, our guest Josh Boubière has agreed to read the trivia question. He didn't know that, but it's right there in front of you, Josh.
Yeah, good thing I've got it.
And Josh is going to judge the veracity of your answer. And if you get the right answer, we're feeling very generous today. I didn't want to do this, but Norm talked me into it, and Diane says, "Oh, Paul, you got to stop being so cheap." So we're going to give you a subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal worth $32 if you have the answer to Josh's question.
The question is, what is the name of a triple-barreled gun? A triple-barreled gun.
And what's the number?
1-800-966-1039.
And like they say in the country music, don't go away. Okay, we are back, and we are looking to dispose of our trivia question. I'm feeling very generous tonight, and if you have the right answer, we're going to make sure you get a subscription to the Sporting Journal worth $32. And we have some callers, do we, Norm? Let's take one. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. We'd like to know your first name, and we'd like to know where you're calling us from.
Mike. I'm calling from down east tonight.
Hey, Mike. How you doing?
Oh, not too bad. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty well for an old guy. What do you think the answer is?
A drilling or a pepper box.
Let's check with the warden lieutenant, see what he thinks.
Oh, I think he got it.
Think he got it?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah. How did you know the answer to that? Did you Google it?
I got a son that's real quick with his fingers.
All right. Yeah.
Hey, at least I'm honest, right?
You are. We appreciate that. We like honesty here on the Maine Outdoors. We don't get it all the time, but we appreciate it. So anyway, Mike, you've won the subscription to the journal. Now, you already have one, don't you?
I don't know if that's been renewed for a while or not. So if it is, it's probably just barely running out or whatnot.
Oh,
so
that's
if they
good.
Could just tack it right on, I guess.
All right, that's what we'll do. But we would like, just for bookkeeping purposes, we'd like Norm to get your exact mailing address so we can double check it with our books, okay?
Yeah. Quick question. How's Bob doing?
Bob's doing well. Yeah, Bob.
Okay, I just wanted to check in on him.
Yeah, no, he's doing well. Yeah.
Yeah, good. Glad to hear that.
Okay. Stay on the line, and we'll get your address. Okay, Mike?
Thank you, sir, and we appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye. All right, that's a correct answer. A triple-barrel gun is a drilling, and I got that right out of the little outdoor trivia booklet. And next week we'll have another one just as tough.
They're all tough. I haven't got one right yet.
Anyway, again, if you just joined us, our guest tonight is Warden Lieutenant Josh Boubière, and he is the Warden Lieutenant here in the Bangor headquarters. He heads up the statewide search and rescue team, and it's always been a fascinating topic. I know the great job the wardens do in finding lost people, and I thought it'd be interesting to get him on the show tonight and talk a little bit about what they do and how they do it. Let's start out, Josh, if you don't mind. Maybe just explain to our listeners like the structure of search and rescue. How you guys are formed, what the chain of command is, so forth.
Sure. So I guess first off, statutorily, the warden service is responsible for search and rescue and in the state of Maine, inland search and rescue on, you know, lakes, rivers, streams, in the woods. So we have a search and rescue team that's I oversee along with several other sergeants. We have a planning section, a operations section, and logistics and communications. And traditionally, our planning section is used to be, you know, looking at paper maps back in the day.
Yeah.
And now it's, you know, you got your laptops up and you're running over, you know, digital maps and, you know, they're making the search assignments, you know, working with the supervisors and the local warden to kind of, and utilizing some search theory to draw up assignments. Once those assignments are drawn out, now we're doing everything, you know, electronically, so to speak, with GPS units. So the operations, the wardens in that section will come in and get the assignment, usually grab a GPS from a volunteer or another warden, and that assignment gets dumped on that GPS and off they go. So that's kind of how the team's made up. We have a mobile command vehicle. It's actually stored right here in Bangor. You know, I think it's probably, I believe it's almost 14 years old now, but we can roll that thing out, and we've taken it to Baxter State Park. We've taken it in up to the Allegash for those areas where we don't have a good place to set up a command post. You know, we got satellite internet on it. There's printers in there. There's pretty much everything you could possibly need. And, you know, we utilize that as well quite often. So
we have a call. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Warden Lieutenant Boubier. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Dennis from down in Naples. I got a question, and it might be a stupid one, but I don't fish very often, and I got two young boys I want to take out and just at least give them an experience. And I was wondering if there's anywhere I can fish in Maine, maybe on a one-time basis or without a license, you know, something like that.
You mean
that's my question.
You or your youngsters?
Well, I guess all three of us, I was thinking, but if they get away with it easy, I can just have them do it, you know. I just want to introduce them to it, you know what I'm saying?
Go ahead, Josh.
And I didn't know, and I'm happy to pay for the license, but I didn't want to do it just one time if it was silly for this year, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So usually there's twice a year, generally in the winter, and then late May or June. Sometimes it's been around Father's Day. We usually push something out there. It's free fishing weekend. So for the adults, you don't need a fishing license on those particular days. Aside from that, I mean, if you're just trying to get them into it, you know, you obviously can, you know, help them along and, you know, you know, as long as they're doing the majority of the work, so to speak, it's fishing shouldn't be work, but, you wouldn't need to, you know, purchase a license just to help facilitate them to fish and learn how to do it.
Understood. I mean, I've been years ago, but it's been a while. I just didn't want to bother with it if I was just taking them out to, if they're interested, I thought they'd get into it. If not, they won't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But, I appreciate that very much.
All right.
Okay.
And that goes with rivers, lakes, rivers, streams, all the same.
Yeah, everything's the same. Well, you could take them out in the ocean too, and you wouldn't need a fishing license out there, so.
Yeah.
See, I wondered about that because my father used to take me out once in a while and just go in the ocean down by Hopwell, and he must have known more than I did back then. I'm talking 20 years, 30 years ago.
Sure.
All right.
Well, good luck to you.
And that was not a stupid question.
In fact,
there's no such thing as a stupid question on Maine Outdoors. Sometimes there's a stupid answer, but there's no stupid question.
Right.
All right. Thanks for the call.
I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
All right.
Take care.
Appreciate the call.
Goodbye.
And we have another caller standing by. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. What is your first name, if you don't mind, and where are you calling us from?
Charles, and I'm from East Mullen Market.
Hey, Charles. How are you?
Fine. I have something I'm questioning about is usually in the last 5 years, I've got probably 3 doe permits. I don't care to hunt anymore, and I've given 2 of them away to my great-grandkids, and 2 of them have started hunting because of it.
That's
I got
great.
One this year, and they're not transferable, and I'm wondering why.
Oh, do they stop making them transferable?
Yeah, that's correct. I, you know, as far as that's kind of more of like the back end type of a question that I'm not sure I unfortunately have the answer for you. Like as far as why we made them non-transferable, I really don't know. I don't know why we stopped doing that.
Because I just don't want to kill anymore, so I quit. I've done my share.
Sure. Yeah.
And I'd like to help people want to get into hunting, and it kind of upsets me that I can't transfer it to one of my grandchildren.
Yeah. So you've lost the lust for the hunt, eh?
Yes, I killed enough.
Yeah. You know, I was told that I would.
I think it should continue.
You said what?
Go ahead.
I was told that I would get to that place in my life, but I'm old as dirt, and I still love to go out there and hunt. I don't know what happened.
Well, I'm almost 90, and I said I've had my share, but
yeah,
just too much work now.
Yeah, well, good for you. You had a good a lot of memories stored up, I'm sure.
And great that you're encouraging the younger generation with the grandchildren to get them out. That's good to encourage them.
You bet.
Exactly right, and I'd like to do this one more, but I can't.
Yeah. Well, you know, you ought to look into that and find out. Maybe it's a bad idea, you know. Sometimes things can be changed if enough people speak up. Yeah. All right. Appreciate the call.
Well,
yep. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, and good luck to you. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. Are we taking a break now, Norm, or are we good for a couple minutes?
It's your call. We can take it right now, or we can go.
Okay. I want to have one more question to Josh, and then we'll boogie on and have a commercial break.
Sounds good.
I wanted to ask you. We were talking about the structure of the organization. I want to just ask you a question. Let's say a hunter calls the warden service from I don't know somewhere around Lincoln somewhere, and says, and it's like 5 o'clock at night or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and it's getting dark, and one of our hunters did not show up.
Yep.
Once that call is made, can you just give us a little timetable? What happens after that?
Yeah, so what I was describing earlier was really our search and rescue team, the incident management team, and that deployment of that team doesn't happen until, you know, a search is really blowing up, so to speak. It's getting bigger. We haven't found, like, your average search, that scenario you just gave, obviously happens all the time, frequently, and what's going to happen in that scenario is the district warden, the warden that covers that area, or if he or she is off, it's going to be an abutting warden. They're going to respond immediately. Usually what it looks like is the warden arrives on scene and meets the complainant, is going to gather the basic information. What was the person wearing? Name. What do they have for equipment? Do they have a phone on them? How familiar are they? How familiar are they with the area? General health, those types of questions. And then the warden's going to, you know, we're going to find out what search efforts have happened to this point by the family or friends or anything, if any. And then they're going to do what we call a hasty search, which is kind of like a real quick and dirty, you know, running out maybe some roads in a truck.
Yep.
It could be on an ATV or a snowmobile or on foot, trails, things like that. And, you know, they're looking for the most obvious, you know, in the most obvious places where this person should be or is likely to be and, you know, end it sooner than later.
Probably in most cases they show up eventually, right?
They do.
Yeah.
A lot of times people, well, either they're truly not lost and someone hit the panic button a little too soon.
Or they were temporarily lost.
Happened. Yep. Or they're right. They find themselves. That's always cool. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
Right. So
is there a duty team each week or month standing by, or do you put it together based on?
we put it together on, I mean, we're 24/7 coverage. I say we, the warden service as a whole. We have to have people working. So we always have kind of like a minimum coverage in every area, whether it's a section, mostly a section, which is supervised by a sergeant. So there's always going to be somebody that's available to respond. And then as far as the team goes, if a search, you know, if it goes 8, 10 to 12 hours, you know, say that first game warden arrives on scene, does his or her hasty search work.
How long does a hasty search last?
It all depends. I mean, we could do hasty searches for days, or you could do, you know, there's always an element of a hasty search as you expand out beyond your initial search area. You're still, okay, you know, now we're going to shift over onto the west side of this road. We may be half a mile away, but we're going to now hasty with vehicles, you know, while we're still doing like grid type searches back closer to the point last seen. So, you know, but that initial warden's going to respond. He or she's probably going to call for canines, ask to try to get a plane and an aircraft. So
that's what I wanted to ask you. Like, say this guy Joe Blow is lost, and morning dawn comes and he's still lost.
Yeah,
does that automatically mean aerial launching of aircraft to search at that point?
Standard. It's standard operating procedure for us to call.
Get in the air, right?
Yeah, get a plane up. We have a drone now, too, as well, that we use that can be just as effective depending on what type of terrain you're looking at and stuff like that. But, you know, generally if we go 8 hours or through an overnight and somebody isn't found, now we're going to start calling more resources to come in, and probably my team is going to get involved with it.
Yeah. We're going to take a commercial break. Are you going to take a call, Norm?
Either way, we can either take a call right now or right after the break.
Would you stand by, caller? We're going to take a quick commercial break, and we'll be right back and take your call. Go ahead, Norm. Thanks. Okay, that was another shortest break in broadcast history, but we're glad to be back. We can use the time because we have a fascinating guest tonight. And if you have a question for Josh, Warden Lieutenant Josh Bouvier, you can call us at 1-800-966-1039, and Norm would be more than pleased to take your call. And Catherine, you had a question for Josh, right?
Well, I had questions about the volunteers, and I know that you have a lot of volunteers, like how many and what the process is, and I know they have to be certified. Like, could you talk a little bit about that if someone was interested?
Yeah, so we partner with the Maine Association for Search and Rescue, MASAR. Anyone out there that's listening, you're interested, you can go just Google MASAR, M-A-S-A-R. And there's a website, there's links on there that can put you in, you know, collect your information. Someone can be in touch with you. But we rely very heavily on them. There's probably, I don't know what the current list of certified volunteers is. I mean, we utilize certified and uncertified. You know, most of the people join the team. It does take a little while to become certified. Sometimes certifications lapse for different reasons and things like that. It's not to say that we're not going to use you, but you know, when a search and rescue team, say it's Pine Tree Search and Rescue, shows up and they may have 8 certified people, and they may bring along 4 uncertified people, but they're operating within that certified unit.
As a team.
So
right.
As a team, yeah. So we're very fortunate in Maine to have that group. So
absolutely. Yeah. And I know there's quite a process to be certified for some of them. The online class you were telling me about and different things. It's not like you can just say, oh, I'll help. It's a very qualified group of people. You don't want to lose the volunteers.
They are much professionals in what they do, and
it's not just Lost Hunters. You do dive teams and some Kentuckic River Race.
Yeah, we do a lot of stuff. You know, there's a lot of, you know, we typically utilize them with for grid searching and things like that. You know, they don't often get involved with water recovery type things. Searches. But we, you know, I'd say the number, it just seems that way. The number of large scale searches that we've had over the last several years has gone down somewhat. So I couldn't maybe they get called eight, nine, 10 times a year, you know? But that's generally clustered between May and October, September. That time of year is a kind of like the search season for us, so to speak.
You know, the good news is we're stacking up phone calls. That doesn't often happen. Let's. We don't want to get the stack too big. Let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors with Warden Lieutenant Josh Boubière. Go ahead.
Is that me?
That is you.
Okay. I had a friend of mine that had a medical problem up in North Maine Woods, and he had a Garmin,
InReach
2, and I was wondering, is there any personal location beacon that you would recommend for places where you don't have cell service or Wi-Fi or anything?
I guess I won't advocate for any one in particular. I know there's a lot of them out there. The most common one we used to see was the Spot devices.
Yeah, those are good.
But there's so many of them out there. I think most all of them are very reliable. We use the Garmin InReach ones, and the InReach capable GPSs. You kind of get two in one. So, short of putting a plug in for Garmin, the Warden Service uses them, so I can speak to them, and I know they're reliable. And you can get emergency messaging out there and have pre-programmed stuff. So I can confidently recommend it.
Oh, yeah. What is your first name, caller?
Sandra.
Sandra, where are you calling from, Sandra?
I'm calling from Castine.
From Castine. That was a superb question. Get the Best Question of the Year award.
Excellent.
That was a good question.
I hope I answered it, Art.
Yeah, you did a good job.
Well, my neighbor on the lake, he actually saved his life with a Garmin InReach.
Oh, yeah. Good, excellent.
Yeah, and there's a story on Chamberlain Lake a couple of years ago. A couple were out on a canoe. They got in really bad water, tipped over, and the waves were so high the search wardens couldn't find them bobbing about, but the guy had a spot, one of the spot locators, and they were able to get a fix on these people because of that spot locator. That saved those people's lives, didn't it, Josh?
Yeah. And we had a warden go through the ice up there on a snowmobile, and and it was definitely sub-zero temperatures.
Yeah.
The sled went to the bottom, and he was able to use his InReach to communicate to one of the other wardens up at Rip Dam, and he had to get into a camp to get warm.
Saved his life,
for sure. Yeah,
amazing. Hey, thanks for the call, Sandra. Great question.
All right, thank you.
Take care.
Bye.
Yep. All right. We have another caller stacked up. Let's take it. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. What's your first name? And we'd like to know where you're calling us from.
Well, my name is Sherry, and I'm calling from Woolwich. My question is, since the wardens use all the equipment, such as the ATVs, the drones, yada, yada, is there a cost that you incur for finding the person? Not that you don't want to find the person, but, it's like when you take an ambulance to the hospital, they're going to charge you for the ambulance, whether you called it or not.
That's a good question.
Are you going to be charged, for the finding thing?
Right. Yeah, I get what you're saying. And the answer is most likely no. I'm going to say no, you're not. I say most likely because the state law does allow for the warden service to charge for, and under certain circumstances, we can charge a person for the search, or somebody that essentially falsely reports someone to be missing, like causes a search to happen when they knew that was, there was nobody missing, there was no cause for that search. I will say that I don't believe the warden service I shouldn't say the history of the warden service, but in 17 years and change, we've never charged anybody for that. So there's obviously costs. Clearly there's costs incurred for searches. It costs a lot of money to run planes.
I think New Hampshire and some of the other New England states are doing so.
It's a lot more common in New Hampshire because a lot of their stuff is rescue based scenarios.
Yeah.
In the presidentials where people are going up clearly like ill-equipped.
People are taking chances, right. Josh, because they have these darn iPhones.
Yeah,
they think they think they're foolproof, right?
Yeah, and I think, you know, there's some of those like you know, like Mount Washington, Mount Katahdin, like microclimate type areas that, because it's only 5,000 feet, because it's only 6,000 feet, they severely underestimate the what can go wrong.
Oh yeah,
so yeah,
that was a good question.
That was a good question.
Yeah. Okay, well,
that's my friend said that if he gets lost and it costs money, just leave him die in the woods.
Well, that's part of the reason why we never we're very hesitant to charge people. We want people to call when they need to call.
Yeah, you know, that was gonna. I have a list of questions that I drew up. That was one of my questions.
You
stole my thunder.
Yeah, good one.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
Thank you for calling. That was a good question. Okay, we have all kinds. Catherine, do you have a question for?
Well, I wanted to know. We talked, I know, prior to airtime about all these interesting cases. What was your most interesting or important case to you?
Boy, there's a lot of them. They've been just about 17 years and doing search and rescue right from the beginning, and there's literally hundreds. But probably Geraldine Largay.
Yeah, that was the one that like had caught my interest because I'm a hiker. I love the AT trails all around Sugarloaf, and that's where she was.
Yeah, I was doing some mapping, planning, working on our planning section at that time, but I was also an investigator for us and was doing a lot of interviews and trying to chase down leads and things like that. So. Got very quite close with the family, really.
Yeah.
And stayed in contact with them over the years afterwards. So, I mean, that one sticks out. There's other ones too. You know, it tends to be the people you don't find that stick out to you, like Ayla Reynolds, Diana Esty, in Medford. There's a few. We find most people that go missing, but every once in a while, I mean, we talked about
the Robert Smith.
Some others that.
And that man that was lost in Garfield Plantation, Mr. Smith, I understand the next spring, the wardens went back there with dogs, scent dogs, and even drained some of the beaver bogs trying to find his body.
Yeah.
And there was no sign of him. We may never know, right?
Well, unfortunately, you don't until if someone was to be lucky enough to, you know, did he go beyond the search area? That's entirely possible. Yeah. Did we miss him? That's entirely possible too. You know, I talked to retired wardens that were part of that search back then, and that was right at the infancy. There was GPSs that we were using for the first time, but not a lot. Like there was, you know, these big brick style GPSs with the backpack on them, you know, and prior to that, but there was, like I said, there was maybe one or two we were just kind of messing around with at the time. So, you know, back then, if you were on a grid team, say, you were given an assignment that was drawn up by a game warden looking at a map in the command post, and you know, your instructions would be go to this corner of this road and, you know, this river or stream. You're going to go, you know, a quarter of a mile, however many chains up the river, or until you get to the third stream that feeds into that river, and then you're going to turn and go westerly, you know, 280 degrees, and you're going to go for another distance and come back. Well, what we found once we got GPSs, they were given those instructions and they ran a GPS and they came back and they were downloaded. You know, it was like, hey, why did you turn around here? You didn't go to the third stream.
Yeah.
Well, the search team, you know, they're saying, no, we did. We hit the first one, second one, third one.
Yeah.
Well, there was an extra stream in that didn't show up on the map. So those were the things that were happening. And could we have obviously not searched an area? It's entirely possible, you know. But you know, you'd like to think at some point, sometime someone's going to find something out there.
We have some calls backed up. Let's take a call. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. We'd like to have your first name and where are you calling us from?
Yes, my name is Scott and I'm calling from Waterville, Maine. My brother was a retired game warden, lieutenant, and he'd always tell me about the stories you guys were just talking about. But one of the things that we, didn't have a chance to talk about was Operation Game Thief, and I'd like to know just how that whole thing works.
Main Operation Game Thief is a nonprofit. Through fundraising efforts and donations and things like that, they're able to offer rewards, like we talked about at the beginning of the show, the $2,000 reward for the gill net up on the McGalloway. And they're a partner of ours in what we do, and sometimes we'll help out with some of their fundraising efforts, and they'll, if there's specialty, equipment that it's not standard issue type things, like they had bought, I think for every supervisor for the wardens in that section, I think it was like a handheld infrared, thermal type imaging device and things like that. Those are sorts of things that, there's a lot of money cost associated with that. We don't issue every single game warden a handheld thermal device. So
you bet. We've got to take a commercial break here. And you're going to tell us about General Appliance, Catherine.
I sure will. General Appliance Services, now owned and operated by Gary Coleman, who's been doing service work for General Appliance for 35 years. Nothing has changed. Rebuilt appliances available, parts and service for all makes and models, always reliable, giving you complete support after the sale. Gas appliances for your camp, gas refrigeration, gas lights, gas mantles, gas freezers, gas ranges. And Norm's favorite is what? The compost toilet. So come visit us at our new location, just two doors up, still here serving up first-class customer service at 103 Center Street in Brewer, Maine.
Okay, and before we run up against the clock, Josh, I have to get this question in.
Right. No. You got one more caller.
Oh, can I ask my question first?
He's the boss.
All right, let's take the call. Let's take the call. Good evening, caller. You're in Maine Outdoors. Go ahead.
This is Barbara from Fremont. I am calling because my son is a wonderful fisherman. He was down at Naughton's Pond in Lincolnville Center, and what came out of the woods and swam in front of him was a mountain lion.
When was
25 feet from him?
When was this?
2 days ago.
Yeah.
Did he get a picture?
He swam 20. What?
Was he able to get a photo?
His wife was with him, but he said he weighed about 180 something pounds.
Wow.
Estimated, but he did call the game wardens, and I guess they're going to do research on it.
Interesting.
Yeah, good.
You don't find mountain lions in Maine.
No, right. Tell him to call into our program next week. We'd love to talk to him. Okay.
All right. I will.
All right.
Yes, I will.
Thank you very much.
He's an awesome hunter.
Have him call in.
A fisherman, so.
All right.
Okay,
Thank you. Yeah. Bye bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Okay. My question, Josh, is this: we talked before the program. 1982. George Westcott was lost on Rum Ridge up near Greenville.
Yep.
He was missing for 3 weeks. Warden Service gave him up for dead 5-6 days after he was lost, and he showed up. And there's quite a story that goes with it, and we're going to run a cover story in the Northwood Sporting Journal. One of the criticisms they have of the Warden Service was they did an inadequate profile of him. They said he was overweight, said he was a smoker, and he told Bud Levitt on a TV program after the fact, 10 years later, that A, he's not a smoker, B, he was not overweight, and he certainly didn't look it. He looked like a big, strapping 55-year-old guy. So I guess my question is, had you ever heard about this, and how do you do profiles on these lost people?
So I'd heard about that one. We have still like paper records floating around out there, and I think I had come across that particular search, and George ended up showing up, like, I think it was like 3 weeks later or something like that.
Right.
Excuse me. But nowadays, as far as building a profile on somebody, we typically, as part of that, we talked about earlier, the initial response when a game warden goes to a house or a camp or, wherever the complainant is, they do what we call the lost person questionnaire. It's like 8-9 pages worth of questions from, age, health, what activity were they doing? How familiar are they with the area, with the activity? What do they have for equipment? you know, what's their skill level, all those sorts of things, like their address, their telephone numbers. It's extremely thorough, and that's what we're using to try to build that profile, so to speak, on the person.
So if I say Paul Reynolds is lost in Orson Bog up near Brownville, mm-hmm. this fall, you'd talk to Diane, my wife?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you'd ask her questions.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah. I'd ask her, okay, well, when was the last time you saw Paul? Okay, she's going to tell me when she saw you. Mm-hmm. What was Paul wearing? What did Paul have with him? Did Paul tell you how long he was planning on going out for? Does he have stuff to spend the night in the woods? Has he ever done this before? Has he had to spend the night in the woods? How's his health? Any known medical conditions? Is there medications that we need to be aware of that, you know, think of something that's not detrimental, but if someone's, say, like on an anti-seizure medication, or they're taking something because they're diabetic that they have to take, mm-hmm. you know, and they've missed that dose, and, you know, that can change things entirely. So, you know, how familiar is Paul with the area? What's he have for a firearm? You know, we'll get sometimes into, not generally initially, but, you know, there's sometimes other indicators. Some people will tell us, you know, family members that, you know, he or she has been depressed lately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you start going down that path, you're dealing with despondency, and,
yep.
you know, is this a situation where they're going into the woods to end their life? So those things are difficult conversations. But
do you have like a computer program that you pump all this info in and it gives you a risk factor or whatever? Is that sophisticated or
there are programs out there, but we collect stats for a reason, and we break down every individual by their profile, not so much the profile but the activity type. So if you're lost searching for, if you're going to pick your blackberries and you get lost picking blackberries, I'm going to put you in a search and rescue gatherer category. And there's statistics that come from the International Search and Rescue Database that's going to tell me how far from your point last seen typically you're going to travel, or 75% of the time you're going to go 0.7 miles away. And that kind of helps us start to put some kind of sideboards on how far we're going to start to look. Those are the things we use. And I don't even know how many categories there are. There's a ton of them. Fisherman, angler, hunter, ATVer.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife is laughing because you're talking about me lost in a blackberry patch. But as long as there's plenty of blackberries around,
right,
it'll be all right.
Yeah. Yeah. It doesn't rain. Stays above 40
yeah.
degrees.
Yeah. We have about 2 minutes left. Catherine, I'm going to allow you one more quick question.
Oh gosh, he answered my question. I wanted to know about the volunteers and all of the categories that.
All right.
I'm sorry, I don't have another question.
Okay, I have one more question.
All right.
When, you know, hunters, lost hunters, or it could be an Alzheimer patient. Mm. When, how does a person decide when to call, put that call into the warden service?
If you're asking me, I'm going to tell you as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sooner than later. Especially if it's.
So you guys wouldn't be upset if Joe Smith comes out of the woods half hour later after we called you?
We're doing anywhere from 400 to 500 calls, search and rescue calls a year.
Are you really?
And out of those, probably half or over half of them are just like that.
False alarms?
Yeah, well, or it's like the game warden gets rolling and before she can get there, it's over. Like the kid's found in, sleeping under a tarp in the front yard or whatever the scenario is. But no, I'd much rather.
So you're not going to be mad at anybody if they call you prematurely.
Nope. No. I mean, it's very frustrating when you find out that this person's been missing for 4 or 5 hours, particularly when we could have had daylight to operate under.
Yeah. So. Okay. I think we're just about out of time. I want to thank you for being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you were great.
Been fascinating. We could probably do 2 hours. I'm sure people would love to ask. I hope we took most of the calls. I think we did. And we appreciate you being here, and congratulations on all the great work you folks do.
Thank you.
I know a lot of the folks you find aren't missing hunters or missing fishermen. They're folks who walk out the back door and get lost, right?
Yeah, not so much anymore. Yeah, there's a lot of a lot of, you know, Alzheimer's, dementia, unfortunately, substance abuse type situations. Yeah. So,
anyway, thanks a lot. We appreciate you taking the time to be with us. We know you're a busy guy, and we appreciate it. Okay. Our guest next week, Catherine, is going to be a fellow named Fred Bird. That's really his name. And he's from the Congressional Sportsmen's Association. And he's going to tell us about governance in wildlife management. It sounds a little dry, but I think it'll be fascinating.
We'll liven it up.
All right, we will. And we'll see you all next week right here on Maine Outdoors.